History That Doesn't Suck is a legit, hard-hitting American history podcast told through entertaining stories. Join me, Professor Greg Jackson, for History That Doesn't Suck, an Odyssey podcast, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Friday to all of you. We made it to the end of the week. We are in day three of Texans training camp. Sean Pendergast and Seth Payne with you, live from the Methodist Training Center, where in a matter of hours, we will be out here sweating again today, bringing the people with
us. Oh, felt good. Felt good to get a sweat in yesterday.
It was good, man.
Felt like I was one of those old men in the sauna that don't care how naked they are in front of everybody.
It was a little over the top that you showed up in a towel.
I was, that I sat buck naked with my legs spread open.
Yeah.
Oh, Texans HR was so annoying about that.
Yeah. But I thought you made a good point. That
I'm like, listen, I work in radio.
Yeah.
I just had to file a report against Jesse Watt. Because she was talking a little too brusquely, okay?
Yeah. I thought you made a really good point to them that you're not an employee of theirs, so you're allowed to wear the towel with your legs.
Yeah, I've got diplomatic immunity.
That's right, yeah.
My overarching theme of the last couple days of training camp, when it comes to the offense, because let's be honest, nobody's worried about the defense. Right. You know, there's injury, like Jake Hansen got injured, okay, with everybody
and
loves
we wish
Jake
him
Hansen.
The best.
Yeah, and hopefully it's not that big a deal.
Right.
Do we know if it's a big deal?
I haven't seen anything. D'Amico said it's a foot injury. And
so he went down with a foot injury yesterday.
Didn't look great.
This is what it is. Tell me if my bar is set too low. But okay. I think the biggest difference between this year and last year in training camp is I've noticed that I do not have a complete and total sense of utter despair about the offense.
No.
And so the first 2 days, and I said this immediately after yesterday's practice in a couple of either on a live stream or an interview or something, you know, I caught myself. I keep saying, like, well, it's no pads, so you don't want to read too much into it. And then I realized, you know what? I will read into it, because part of the problem with the offensive line the last couple of years hasn't been just physical mismatches or losing the physical battle. It's the times in training camp, whether they're in pads or not, when defensive linemen were completely unblocked. The offense had no answer for the blitz. CJ was just left out there naked and afraid. And that's what's changed a lot, is that they have hemmed up so many of these run-throughs and guys just being in the backfield. Whether you're in pads or not, they're just a sharper unit. And it's not like it's been an electric show, you know, in the passing game or anything, but it's been functional.
Yes.
And you're like, Jaden Higgins is getting his. Brevin Jordan is getting his. This has been a night and day in terms of just looking like a competent, functioning offense.
In terms of competitiveness.
Yeah.
Seth, lately on cable television or DirecTV streaming, as Amy and I use.
Cable attached to your television?
One of the channels has been showing all the Rocky movies in a marathon.
Yeah.
Constantly. And I like the Rocky movies, so I wind up on the Rocky movies a lot of times. And in making the comparison to the Texans offense from last year to this year, you know what the thing that makes the Rocky movies is that Rocky punches back on Apollo Creed and Clubber Lang and guys like that. Like last year, the Texans offense, they got punched, but then they were a tomato can the entire practice. Mm-hmm. They didn't punch back. What makes it compelling is when the underdog punches back.
Right.
And they're punching back now in these first 2 days.
It looks like, so if we went through the Rocky movies in the original Rocky, the best of the Rockies, the goal was just to make it through the entire fight.
Right.
He just wanted to make it 15 rounds.
Yeah.
Kids, you used to be allowed to go 15 rounds in a boxing match. And it was...
And have clear brain damage by round 8. And they're like, cool.
Then we got wiser. Like, hey, getting punched in the face is only safe for 12
rounds. For 12 rounds.
All right. 13 is a little excessive.
We're not animals. But that's what we're seeing out here.
Then we got humane and we said, let's take the gloves off and call it MMA.
Yeah, inside a chain link fence.
They're kind of gloves.
Right.
So this is the thing that they fought back.
Yeah.
And I do think that as I'm saying that yesterday, I also thought, okay, well, should I actually be worried about the defense that this haggard group of ne'er-do-wells is landing some punches against them? Nope. No. Everybody's out there. They're working hard. It's the same guys defensively. It's just a legitimately better operation. Look, early results, et cetera, et cetera. But this is how hapless it was last year at times, where it really, you were waiting for the offense to show some signs of life. So I was talking to Sarge yesterday, I think, And I, you know what I try to do is when I come out to camp, like, okay, pretend I'm an observer and I've never seen this team before and I don't know anything about them. I would come out here and I think, by and large, I would say this looks like a pretty competitive football team, and I wouldn't be looking at the offense as, oh, wow, what's going on here? Like, what's – you know, there were times last year where I might have said, like, that's your starting quarterback? They go, like, wait, you feel good about this
guy?
No,
they looked like a 2-15 offense last year.
Yeah. You know what there was last year, too? I was trying to go through, and I went back and looked at some people's social media posts, mm-hmm. hot take artists like Sean T. Pendergast. Mm-hmm. And, there, you know, it was a conversation last year about what's going on with CJ's accuracy.
Yeah.
You know, that was a conversation point last year. So far, I haven't seen any reason for any kind of discussion like that.
Well, if you recall, last year when he got to training camp, he was coming off a spring where he hardly threw at all.
Right, yeah.
So he had a shoulder thing going on.
Hadn't had any real reps with all 11 offensive players in an offense where the quarterback is expected to do a lot and direct traffic with all 11 guys.
This was D'Amico Ryans yesterday talking about the offense has looked much, much better, but I like that D'Amico's holding to a standard here because he said compared to day one, the offense took a step backwards in day two.
The one thing that stood out to me is, you know, we had some poor pre-snap penalties. We kind of went backwards offensively, so those are some things that stood out where we can clean those things up. Defensively, we got to finish on the football better. Had a couple opportunities to take the football away, and we did it. So both sides right there have things we can clean up on coming back tomorrow.
So that felt like kind of when you criticize your one child for being academically ineligible, but then the other, you're like, how come you didn't get, you got an A-?
Yeah, right,
but,
yeah, I was gonna say B+.
Wait, you got an A-? No, you are an A student, favorite child.
Yes, that's exactly what it is.
The offense is kind of the one like, yeah, he's doing his best. Now, I think the important thing about that is D'Amico framed it as the entire, you know, they took a step back. It was, as far as I could tell, it was just one set of downs for the number one.
It was during the second team session.
Yeah, and it really otherwise, and it stood out. It was notable and conspicuous because it was the only one. But there was just a bad stretch where Keelan Rutledge and C.J. Stroud had a fumbled snap exchange. Mm-hmm. C.J. was under center. Daniil picked it up, right? I think it was Daniil picked it up.
Yes, it was Daniil.
Would have run for a touchdown.
Yep.
Unless Keelan could have caught him. So,
Keelan riding Daniil Hunter on his back.
Fueled by anger and rage at botching the snap.
Yes.
And then there was a run that went nowhere. Then there was an incomplete pass. Yeah. And then there was that was the same set of downs where CJ and Nico just were not on the same page.
Yes.
Deep ball.
Yep.
Because Nico was maybe a half step on Stingley and thought CJ was going to go over the top with it. CJ actually threw back shoulder to the sideline.
Yeah.
I even looked at that play, though, as a positive because I think CJ placed it exactly where he wanted to put it. It was just a miscommunication or a misread between him and Nico.
Yeah, I feel if we were watching these two teams, the first string, specifically the first string, offense and defense the last 2 days, and it were an actual game, and I'm just looking at the quality of play, and someone says, what do you think the score would be right now if this were an actual game being played, knowing that they're just running plays at the same line of scrimmage? Obviously, they're not moving up and down a field. It feels like the defense would be the team that has the Texans defense would be up like 13-10 right now.
I think it would be 6-0.
You do?
Yeah, because I think Daniil runs that fumble back for a touchdown.
Okay.
But then Kaimi uncharacteristically misses the extra point. But everybody misses an extra point, you know, every year or two. Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
I want Kaimi to get any of that stuff out of the way early. So I think that there haven't been a lot of deep shots like by the offense, which I don't expect that. I think any offense in the league right now practicing against this secondary wouldn't have a lot of deep shots. That's why the one play, even though CJ and Nico weren't on the same page, I felt like the process as far as, like, hey, Nico, one of the best receivers in the league, going against Derek Stingley, one of the best defensive backs in the league. It's not like Nico destroyed Derek or anything, but there was a chance for a play there. And I think CJ threw the ball accurately. He just wasn't on the same page with Nico.
Yep. Here's one more from D'Amico Ryans. The Tank Dell was out here yesterday working out on the side with the jugs machine there. He eventually got in and, as promised by Nick Caserio, got in and did some walkthrough things. It's a big mystery right now with Tanks. All we're left to do is read how he looks doing the things that he's doing out here, and then what people like D'Amico Ryans and C.J. Stroud are saying. here was D'Amico. This is, I think, the first time D'Amico has specifically been asked about Tank. But at any rate, I thought this was an interesting answer yesterday on D'Amico and how eager Tank is to get back out there.
The daily Tank Dell question. Tank is out here. He's working again. He's very eager. I would say he's eager to get back out there. So it's not from Tank. It's me. I'm holding Tank back a little bit to make sure when he's ready to go, he's able to stay out there.
That's the first person I've heard kind of raise their hand and say, "Hey, look, I'm the one who's keeping Tank from being out there."
Yeah,
like, D'Amico, like it's me, guys.
I feel
he's probably taking a bullet for the entire organization.
Well, I feel like Caserio and D'Amico have kind of hinted at this that Tank feels like he's ready for more, but they're going to be very, very careful about it. I think I can't remember whether it was Caserio or somebody else that talked about how. There's so much that goes into when you've been out of football for 2 years. There are a lot of things that Tank hasn't done in a long time. And I think you want to build it up slowly to where being comfortable in the offense, knowing where to line up, doing everything you can to where it doesn't feel like it's just a big old heap of uncertainty and being uncomfortable as he's also trying to run routes versus Derek Stingley and Kamari Lassiter. So, I think that part of it is just building up those reps slowly. I've heard pitchers talk about this before. When you're back in the days when there was when there wasn't a DH in one of the baseball leagues, you might have a guy from the AL that all of a sudden you're playing in a National League game and he's got a bat and run the bases for the first time and in a long time. And I can't remember if it was Clemens or somebody else. He said just getting on base, he was kind of realized like, wow, I got to control my heart rate and my breathing because everything's just, you're thinking about all this stuff. It's just uncomfortable. And there's a high stress level because you're just uncomfortable. You're doing something you're not really comfortable doing. So I think likewise, even though it sounds silly, there's certain things with Tank where you just don't want to overload him physically or his anxiety level by just throwing him right back
That's
out there at
comp.
Full speed.
He's a National League pitcher right now, basically, back in the early 2000s.
Yeah.
We got our first David Montgomery press conference yesterday. First one as a, out here in training camp. I know he did one right after they signed him.
Would have been Clemens. Clemens spent his whole it would have been Clemens because he spent his whole time in the AL. So, when they were playing in National
It was definitely Roger.
Team.
I remember him talking.
It was Roger, yeah.
Yep.
We might have a chance to have a chat with him about that at some point.
We may. We may. Soon, perhaps.
Yes, perhaps.
Perhaps. David Montgomery met with the media yesterday. He was asked about Will Anderson and Danielle Hunter. This is his first training camp going against these two guys. And I'm kind of glad it doesn't sound like people told David Montgomery, hey, last year it was really hard going against these guys.
Yeah.
But he did say he's glad that they're his teammates.
I'm just happy that I'm on the same team as him now, quite frankly. And I'm on the same team as Daniil because they're both freaks, I think the first time.
Have you ever felt like you were living just a B or B plus life? It's so dangerous to live that, more dangerous than a B minus or a C plus life, because when you're living a B or B plus life, you don't change it. You think it's good enough. Is it? I'm Susie Welch. I host a podcast called Becoming You. People think, okay, an A plus life is not available to me, but there is a way. We are all in the process of becoming ourselves. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
I came out here, we was in OTAs and we was doing like some team stuff. And I'm watching like the snap and I'm like, he's jumping outside. This whole time, he not. He's just off the ball like super fast. So it's like seeing somebody come in, he about his business, him being like a little bit younger and him carrying himself in a way to where he makes me want to get better. So I love seeing Will go. I love seeing Danielle go. I love seeing that whole defense go because it's going to force us on the other side of the ball to be better.
The question is obviously about Will, but he mixed Danielle in there.
Yesterday, I filmed some of the defensive linemen doing some of the pass rush drills, and Will, I showed it to you before the.
Yes.
I posted it on my Twitter, FKA Twitter. But he's doing that Danielle hop step now.
Yeah, just what he needed, a new
but
move.
But he did it so freaking fast. It was almost one of those ones where, man. The way he executed it, he better be sure he's only doing that against the really good offensive tackles, because the bad offensive tackles, like, Will was upfield and then back underneath so quick that the bad offensive tackles wouldn't have had time to overreact to getting upfield.
I like that.
And he would have hopped right back into the oven. That's a thing. We'll talk to JJ about it. We got JJ coming up in the next couple weeks.
Yeah.
That this happens with really good defensive linemen. Sometimes if they're planning on a counter, they got to be careful because they're so effective with their first move that they counter back, and the jackass they're going against is just standing there like a fence post, you know? It's like you're trying to juke a fence post.
Yeah.
The fence post never bites. It doesn't have the lateral mobility.
The scouting report for Will Anderson is they hand him the PFF rankings of all the offensive linemen. You only do this from 50. The linemen of 50 and above, only use it for them.
It actually is something that young pass rushers learn. The guys that actually have speed, this didn't apply to me, is that, like, trust your first move. Because you're gonna win with your first move a lot more than you might expect. The guys, when they're young and they don't have the confidence. The counter is just kind of intuitive. I think that with Will, though, it was cool to see that move because you can see he's adding to the repertoire.
Not if you're the other 31 teams, it's not.
But B, I think that we're at this point where, you know, during OTAs, oh, it's Will is wrecking practice. I haven't seen any accusations of him wrecking practice, but he's still making the same plays. It's just that the offense is also, it's not just one in a litany of other guys also wrecking practice.
Right, right, right.
You know, it's like, oh, okay, Will got a tackle for a loss. You know, Solomon Bird had a nice tackle for a loss yesterday. But the offense is having success, too, so it doesn't feel like a steady onslaught.
Punching back.
Of practice. It's like, yeah, how many times can you wreck a practice? You know, last year it was like, okay, there's four TFLs in the first four plays. Guys, I think practice is wrecked.
Yeah.
All right?
No, they're standing on top of it and stamping on it at that point.
Yeah. You're choking a corpse after that.
It's broken. Stop stamping on it.
Hey, Will, stop wrecking practice. Yeah. I wrecked practice in the first period. Yeah. This is just us committing war crimes at this point.
That's right. Hey, did you notice when you awoke this morning that the Astros are only a half game back of the Texas Rangers?
Oh, sorry, Rangers. They must have lost last night.
Yesterday afternoon, actually. It was an afternoon game, so we got to enjoy the fact they lost all afternoon. It was great.
Can I tell you what happened to me last night? I went to bed early again. I'm still catching up from my night of no sleep. I fell asleep with my AirPods in, and it must have been on, I don't know if it was on Twitter or whatever, but I woke up about an hour after I'd fallen asleep, and there were people in my house.
That was
where
you were.
There were people in my house. I didn't know that I was wearing my AirPods.
Oh, no way.
I heard people rustling around in the next room. And it was like their feet were sliding and they were having some conversation about, like, well, what are we going to do? And there's this. And I was like, hell, I woke up. I was like, hey.
Dude.
Hey. And I ran out of the room. And I'm looking around and I'm yelling, like, hey, who's here? Who's in here? And I was so confused because there were intruders in my home. Brandy wasn't there. I don't know where she was.
So were you, like, on TikTok or something?
That was the least of my concerns.
Were you on TikTok? Were you on Twitter, scrolling videos?
I finally realized I had my AirPods in because I took them out to hear what was actually going on. This is how dumb I was, because I was just, you know, I was waking up. I take my AirPods out, and I was like, wait, I got to hear what's going on here. And it was silent. I was like, where'd they go? Where'd they go? Then I put two and two together, Sean.
Oh, good job.
Wait a second.
Oh, my God.
It was some video, and I was so confused, I shut it down and went to bed. It was some video of, like, these women rustling around in a kitchen, like maybe they were preparing a meal.
So you had started watching some video, and then whatever social media platform you were on just started scrolling for you.
And I ended up waking up on the people rustling
Seth waking
through my
up.
Kitchen.
Seth wakes up. He's like, Will Smith was in my kitchen, and Chris Rock slapped him right across the face.
And I can't believe this is how sleep deprived I am. I went right back to sleep.
Of course.
I was just, you know, I was ready to kill somebody with a butcher knife or my bare hands.
Oh, my God.
I was going to wreck their practice.
All right. This is when you're at your best, man. You know, this is when you with the
confused.
Yeah, that was a very funny story right there.
I'm still kind of freaked out by it.
It's a little,
you know what I like though.
No.
I was ready for action.
Yeah.
There was no step back. I was ready. I heard three women rummaging through my kitchen, and I was ready to take care of business.
You're ready to clunk all their heads together like Mo. Get out of here.
You ever think that Seth Payne isn't afraid to take on three women that sound like they're trying to cook up a recipe? You're wrong.
You're wrong.
Yeah.
You're flat out
wrong. Your recipe, ladies.
Oh, my God. All right, we're off and running on a Friday. I appreciate you guys tuning in. Baseball Talk, brief as it was, is brought to you by Xfinity here on Sports Radio 610. Presented by Xfinity, score the most reliable Wi-Fi. One price, 5 years, guaranteed Xfinity. Imagine that. What would we be saying if C.J. Stroud was handling his contract situation the same way Baker Mayfield is? We've got the audio of both. Compare, contrast. We'll do it.
Yeah, he had a really good offseason. It's probably the best offseason he's had since he's been here. He's had a good attitude. He's been consistent. He's got the right mindset. I'd say we've definitely had productive conversations over the course of the spring. So, I mean, there's a possibility that something could come to fruition. So we'll work through it and, you know, see what happens.
Okay, that was Nick Caserio a couple days ago meeting with the media, talking about C.J. Stroud's contract. Nick will join us on Tuesday next week, Tuesday, August 4th. Sometime in the 7 o'clock hour. I'm nailing down a specific time, but I talked to Nick day one of camp.
He'll show up when it works for us, Sean.
That's true. No, that's what I told him.
I told him that with my eyes.
You did?
Yeah. We didn't actually have a conversation, but we nodded at each other, and I basically gave him that look like, you'll come on when we tell you to come on.
Yep. Yeah. And he was cool.
Hey, this is Richard Deitch, the host of the Sports Media Podcast. If you're interested in what's happening with all the places where you consume sports, the Sports Media Podcast has you covered.
I've been turning down interviews all week. Hoda Kotb reached out, Oprah, George Stephanopoulos. So I said no. I was booked on the Deitch Podcast before the Taylor Swift phenomenon. I must live up to my responsibility.
Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
With it. So that was Caserio talking about Stroud's offseason, and they're having productive conversations about a contract extension for C.J. Stroud. Here was C.J. when he was asked about it after practice on day one.
I think, you know, everything has been great. You know, I'm focused on ball, trying to do what trying to just hold my bargain down on just the football side and do what I can, you know, and what I should be doing as a quarterback of this team. So I'm letting them handle it, and seems like everything is going great.
Okay, so my agent's handling it. Things are going fine. Not going to make a big public display out of all this. I think he's handling it really well.
He's handling it well. He's botching the hold my end of the bargain up. He's done that twice now. You can't even get the prepositions right. He's had
I've accepted that this is how it's going to be.
In the OTAs, he said, I've held my bargain up.
Yeah.
And this time he said, I've held my bargain down. We know what he's trying to say.
Yep.
But I just want him to get it right. I feel like once he nails it, then they're going to be ready to pay him on that
one. Yes. What are they waiting for? For him to say, hold down your end of the bargain.
Common
that's what.
Phrase.
Right.
I think they're pretty civil and congenial, and sounds like there's been a little bit of back and forth.
Yeah,
and not all that confrontational.
He's not going to make a public. He's not going to make a public display out of this. Now that we've heard that CJ audio,
he's holding his bargain right in the middle.
He's holding that bargain right in between four fingers and a thumb, man.
If you hold a bargain too tightly, you'll kill it.
Yeah.
If you hold it too lightly, it'll fly away.
You have to hold it like a gentle a gentle dove.
Yes.
But overall, CJ, and not just the other day in the tent over there doing the press conference, but I think throughout the offseason, I think he's given good answers. It sounds like he's had a really good offseason from what everybody's saying. We just heard Nick Caserio say he's had his best offseason as a Houston Texan. So this is fresh in our minds, CJ's answer. Baker Mayfield is trying to get a new contract as well. Now, this would be his, you know, Baker came into the league several years before CJ.
Yeah.
But Baker is in the last year of a three-year, $100 million deal with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. So he's making about $30 million a year. He's got a year left on the deal. Baker thinks he should be in that $55 million class, you know, up with those guys that are in the $50-plus million
range. The franchise tag for quarterbacks right now is $55 million or so, correct?
Yeah. So he's got 1 year left. He's got this year left. He's trying to get a new long-term deal after this year. And so he's been trying all offseason. He's been very public about, hey, when training camp gets here, no more negotiations. If it's going to get done, it gets done by training camp, and that's just the way it goes. Otherwise, he's headed to free agency.
Yeah.
Here was Baker Mayfield yesterday at his first press conference at training camp, not nearly handling it.
Well, for saying it was going to be a hard deadline and then they're not going to think about it.
Yeah. He's much more vocal about how his emotions with this than C.J. Stroud is.
I wanted the deal done. and set the deadline and told them it was going to be all ball after that. And I did mean that. And I don't know if they thought I was just going to take some of the offers that they gave, but I'm at the point of my career and understanding what I've brought to this franchise. One, I'm very, very thankful for the chance they gave me. Do not get me wrong on that. But I've also I really know what I've brought to this franchise, leadership-wise, and even play-wise. It's been some of the best years of my career, and I think it's only going to trend upwards, just being comfortable and feeling that. So disappointing in that regard to not have, you know, to feel disrespect a little bit. And that's really the disappointing part, to feel undervalued after, you know, thinking you've earned it.
Disrespected, undervalued, mm-hmm. disappointed. Those were the words that all made headlines yesterday.
Right, right. Yeah, which is, I like Baker Mayfield. He's grown on me. I didn't like him when he was a younger player, but now he's kind of grown on me. And I think he is the real deal when it comes to toughness and all of that. But, like, man, not everything needs to be said out loud. You don't have to add any extra drama to this situation, especially if you said, hey, we're going to have negotiations, and then I'm going to not worry about it. Oh, it's first week of training camp, and it sounds like I'm out caught up in my feelings. Where'd Mr. Tough Guy go?
Well, that's
right?
The thing, too.
Swallow your feelings and let it turn into a tumor someday, but don't be blabbing about it.
Well, the audio was actually about 4 minutes long. That was just the 40 seconds or so that popped. But he tried to make it clear, like, but no, I'm focused now. It's all about winning. It's all about moving forward. We'll see. I mean, it sounds like he's kind of up in his feelings about this whole thing and the way he's getting, quote unquote, treated right now.
He sounds like a little bit less psychotic Brandon Ayuk.
Here's how you know it's really sticking with him. He did a follow-up interview after that press conference with Jeremy Fowler, probably after practice. Jeremy Fowler of ESPN was out at Tampa Bay Buccaneers practice yesterday. And it would have been very easy for when Jeremy Fowler starts asking contract questions for him to say, I said my piece at the press conference.
Yeah.
I'm football now. It would have been very easy to do that. Take a listen to this audio. He goes deep on what exactly is bothering him about the offers that the Buccaneers have made.
I'm here with Baker Mayfield. Baker, you've used words like disrespected, disappointed, undervalued when it comes to your contract. What value did the team place on you that made you feel that way?
I mean, it was all three, between years, average, and guarantees. Probably the most disappointing is years. Didn't get offered anything over two. And so when you're told you're a franchise quarterback and they handle it otherwise, that's disappointing. So felt like I earned that. It's not a poor me pity party over here. It is what it is. And so that's why I said the deadline was training camp. Focused on the team, focused on getting better and trying to give this team a better chance to win a Super Bowl.
What was their reasoning for that?
For the deadline,
or well, for the number of years, or just
number
like
of
metrics
years
that weren't there for?
I don't know. I don't know why wasn't there. So I can't give an explanation.
Yeah, you've said you're a franchise quarterback. You've shown that. Do you believe, and did you make a stance that you belong in that, you know, top 10 range, $50+ million? That's sort of the market, and where you are.
Yeah, and I told them. I said it publicly. I was never trying to reset the market. I know where I fit in on that. I'm not over realistic on that, but it's also, I know, just to be compensated, put in that category, and salary cap keeps going up. The guys that are going to re-sign next year, it's going to look a lot different. So at the end of the day, it'd probably be still right about top 15 next year this time, but it's unfortunate they failed to recognize that.
How far away were they from that range?
Pretty far.
Yeah.
That is dishing.
That's dishing. And then he would talk with Prisco later on, too.
Would he really?
Yeah, he talked to Prisco.
And was he doing the same thing?
Yeah, basically. He's saying,
probably like, you know, I got to give it to everybody. Yeah, if they're asking it, I can't play favorites.
Now, here. He said that, now remember, after Hardo Baker had set an ultimatum and said there would be no discussions, he said he's open to potentially signing a deal now after. Like, this is where I'm like, all right, dude, you set an ultimatum. You set a hard deadline, and now you're wavering on the deadline.
Yeah.
It sounds like maybe the Bucks actually know you better than you know yourself.
Right, right.
And, okay, they lowballed you. Yeah. And now you're open to doing something past your deadline? He's way up in his feelings, which is a bad place to be when you're in a negotiation.
In a bad place to be
as a quarterback.
When you're the quarterback of the football team, absolutely.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I was watching that yesterday. I'm like, man, I just wanted to give CJ even more credit for how he's been handling his business here. I think with Texan fans, there was, like, not major worry, but slight worry that that's what the Texans would be getting a version of this offseason.
Yeah.
We either, at the very least through the spring, when the player has a little bit of leverage, you know, the voluntary stuff, things like that. Credit C.J. Stroud. He's not only been doing the stuff away from the building, according to everybody, that he needs to do to get into this conversation that Baker's having, but he's been doing all the stuff out here, you know, every voluntary thing, every, you know, every rep out here, you know, every yeah. every question in a press conference about it, he is deferring and giving a 15-second answer and moving on.
Right.
So that just kind of hammered home for me how CJ's been handling it.
And I think we've given him a lot of credit for that. Yeah. You know, we've said that a lot. It's that, man, you know what? Credit to CJ. He hasn't made this a bigger story than it needs to be. The only thing that made it a bigger story was when people just took that one sound bite of him saying, I've held my end of the bargain up, paraphrasing, during minicamp. But it was like he had said that immediately after he said, my job is to improve every day. I'm going to let my agent handle everything else. Yeah. Like it wasn't like he was making some kind of a bold statement or anything. But it was a good sound bite, so people ran with it. I think by and large, he's been quiet about it and said all the right things.
I agree. Baker, on the other hand, flamethrower everywhere.
Yeah, Prisco had envisioned a scenario in which both Mayfield and the Bucks were playing well and the team wanted to get something done. Baker said, well, unless it's some deal where they actually recognize my value and they want me here long term, that was the biggest difference. Okay. There was zero long term lock-in.
So deadline
is kind of opened the door maybe to
clearly a soft deadline.
Yeah.
That he's putting out
so
there.
The franchise tag next year is $50 million for quarterbacks. This year it's $43 million per year for quarterbacks. So, I mean, there is an element of, like, at the very least, if it's going to be a short term deal, you would think that Baker is. I would have no qualms at all about giving him $50 million a year.
No, I wouldn't either.
On a 2-year deal or something.
Oh.
But on a.
The Texans needed a quarterback. Yeah. I'd give Baker 2 years, $100 million like that.
But he also wants a long term lock in.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
this is probably his last big bite at the apple. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the last chance at a real nice, juicy long term deal.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right. That was good. That was compelling audio. All right. Top of the hour at 7 o'clock, Seth is going to empty his training camp notebook. If you want to get up to speed on what's been going on out here, be listening at 7 o'clock. Be listening in the next segment because we've got headlines. The Astros did nothing yesterday and picked up ground in the AL West. That's the best kind of day. And injury update from the Texans, a wild story involving a Houston Rocket as well that we will get to in headlines. All right, let's get to headlines. We've been football heavy in the first hour of the show, so let's get to a little baseball. The Astros were off yesterday. They didn't even need to do anything, and they picked up ground on the Rangers. The Rangers had a 2-1 lead against the Tampa Bay Rays heading into the back end of that game. The Rays, though, able to hit a couple home runs and win that game, a couple solo home runs. They win the game 3-2. The Astros now just a half game back in the division. Who saw this coming? They get swept by the Orioles coming out of the All-Star break. We come in on a Monday after that saying this team needs to sell. They just got swept by the Orioles. This is how you spent your All-Star break?
Yeah.
Getting ready to get swept by the Orioles? And now here they are since then. They've won 8 out of 9. They're a half game back in the division, and they've got the biggest series of the season, the biggest series in quite some time, maybe even going back to last season, where they can be in first place by the time they wake up tomorrow morning.
You know what they do, Sean? They control their own destiny.
They do.
Yeah.
That's always where you want to be.
You can save it on the text line with all of your, you know, logical arguments against whether you can control your own destiny.
Right.
But they've they're in the driver's
stuff.
Seat. How's that? We accept that. They're in the driver's seat. They can single-handedly, without having to worry about anybody else losing or anything, they can take the lead in the division.
It's as fun as it gets for a team that has not been a ton of fun in the regular season the last couple years.
Yeah.
Nathan Uvalde against Hunter Brown, especially with Hunter coming off the last outing that he
had.
Yeah,
no, I mean,
Hunter was outstanding in his last start.
There's so many things when it comes to guys who are coming off the IL and what is their progress going to be. There's a whole lot of directions you could take with Blanco, with Hunter Brown, Eric Geddy and his continued erratics. You know,
okay. Wisniewski's like, back now, too.
Yeah. I mean, the biggest thing, I'm wondering, like, at some point, if we got to get creative and we got all these, you know, all of a sudden you have a plethora of pitchers, Imai's struggles seem to be at this point mostly on the road, and he has a hard time adjusting to various mounds on the road. He's had some good performances on the road, but it's only if the mound is just right, apparently.
Right.
He's comfortable with the Daikin Park mound. But if you got to start at least jockeying it around to where Imai can pitch at home, and
his spot is coming up in the rotation on Sunday, and they've not announced a starter yet.
Right.
So this is going to be one of the interesting sub storylines of the weekend. Is does Tatsuya Imai get his? Does he get his turn in the rotation this time?
It's fun, man. If you want, you got Uvalde versus Brown tonight. You got DeGrom versus Blanco, and then TBD on Sunday.
On both sides.
Yeah.
So should be a whole lot of fun out at Daikin Park. JP France cut loose by the Astros yesterday, by the way. So he was cut loose.
How'd you guys handle, because I was on vacation, how'd you guys handle the depressing news of McCullers being cut by the Brewers? Or did that happen on...
No, it happened while you were gone. While you were gone.
That made me really sad, man.
It was sad. Well, you know, it was sad. I'll tell you how we handled it. It happened the same day that Dallas Keuchel signed a minor league contract with the Oakland A's, or the whatever they are, the A's, the Sacramento A's. So you had two, back in 2017... They had two pitchers make the All-Star team.
Yeah.
Dallas Keuchel and Lance McCullers. A decade later, McCullers is getting DFA'd by the Brewers, and Keuchel is signing a minor league deal with the A's. You know, you would think back then these are two guys that are going to be your foundation for however many years.
Yeah.
And it didn't work out that way.
Keuchel got screwed by them changing the strike zone.
Yeah.
He used to live at the bottom of the strike zone, then they raised it, and boom.
Yep.
There you go.
Jake Hansen injured yesterday here at practice at Texans training camp. Today's day three. Yesterday, day two. Jake Hansen, linebacker, injured. Here was D'Amico Ryans after practice giving clarification.
Jake went down today. Jake Hansen went down. Seems to be a foot injury. We don't know the extent of it. Just happened right now. So we'll evaluate him and see how he progresses towards getting back healthy.
Okay, I will say this just to set the scene. The optics of what happened didn't look great because he got carted off, and it was one of those situations where the entire team, both sidelines, came out to give him the pat on the shoulder kind of thing.
Yeah,
you had the whole team gathered around the cart. That never looks good.
It never looks good, but that was the same scene with C.J. Gardner-Johnson last year, and then
there was
the report that he was going to be out for the year, and we thought, oh, no. And then it turned out, no, he's going to be fine. Yeah, he's going to come back.
He's practicing Monday.
But wait, he's going to single-handedly help you lose your first three games.
Yeah, not only is he coming back, he's going to come back to torpedo the first month of the season.
What a roller coaster of emotions. Oh, no, C.J. Gardner-Johnson's out for the year.
I don't need that
and then
anymore.
2 months later, I was like, oh, could have helped if he was out for the year.
Yep. So that was the update. That's what went on yesterday here at Texans training camp. Stay tuned. In about 10 minutes, Seth is going to give his detailed breakdown of what we saw on both sides of the ball here in day two of Texans training camp. Boy, this Tari Eason story is crazy. Headline on TMZ, Houston Rockets star Tari Eason, my export bleach on my designer clothes.
Oh, no.
Tari Eason... And we know that Tari Eason went through it this season. He did not have the season he was hoping for. He was kind of betting on himself.
Yeah.
The Rockets made him what people said was a really good offer a year ago. And he said, nope, I'm going to hit restricted free agency. Now, we do know this as well. He never hit free agency. The Rockets signed him to a new deal this offseason, 5 years, a little over $80 million. So Tari Eason got a nice contract. But he is, if you're wondering when he went through that slump in the middle of the season, if he had stuff going on off the court, Tari Eason is asking for a domestic violence restraining order against his ex, telling the court she punched him in the face and destroyed some of his designer clothes with bleach. He filed a petition, which TMZ obtained on Thursday, and he's asking for protection from 32-year-old Marilyn Maritza Melo Rodriguez, who he describes as someone he used to date. He claims that one of her friends called him to, quote, tell me she would break both my legs and kill me, end quote. Alleged threats, he said, made him fear for his life.
Could you just kill me first and then break my legs at least?
Can you
show a little humanity or something?
Right.
Make it look worse after the fact.
Why you gotta torture me?
The quote was, and then she, Marilyn went back to his Airbnb where he alleges she, quote, took all my clothes and poured liquid bleach on them, ruining them.
Yeah.
He claims she caused $92,000 worth of loss
in
personal
property. Expensive clothes, man.
Well, yeah, I don't think he used the word designer clothes. I think that's kind of a boomer phrase.
Oh, okay.
I don't think the kids are out there saying, look at my designer jeans. Yeah.
Right.
You can tell an old person. So plus.
But the price tag would indicate that they were designer clothes.
Or it was just a whole lot of clothes.
That could be.
It could have been from Costco.
Wait,
but
$92,000 worth of Costco clothes.
$92,000 worth of clothes.
Yeah.
This is when it's like it was Stefan Diggs. Tari's mom. I'm not saying he's a direct comparison to Stefan Diggs in any way, shape, or form or anything. But man, sometimes you just wonder what's going on in guys' lives, like the stuff that's going on in their personal lives and the choices they make and who they associate with and everything. It's a big deal.
Yeah.
And that's why with Stefan Diggs, I think right now there's a lot of teams that are taking their time and maybe are intrigued by Stefan Diggs.
He's not signed yet.
But there's just always so much drama surrounding him.
Yeah.
And so much of it has to do with the people he associates with.
Yeah. Sounds like this is just a one-time thing for Tari Eason, I guess. But it does explain. Do you give him a little bit of grace for the slumpy ad in the middle of the season?
Not blaming the alleged victim here with him.
Right.
No, I don't give anybody grace based on stuff that's going on in their personal life, you know, to a certain extent. Because that's like the all-time greats, you know. Larry Bird, he didn't know who or where his kids were.
That's
like, there's a whole lot of Michael Jordan, all kinds of disruption. You compartmentalize.
You do. You
okay?
You got to go
out
and drop.
Your life can be a mess. Stefan Diggs, to his credit, does an incredible job of compartmentalizing.
He does.
So, no, I don't give guys, if it's drama with the women in your life or whatever, compartmentalize, man.
Yep.
Use it to drive you, not distract you.
RIP Houston Gamblers, the UFL has decided to move on from Houston as a market, at least for the time being. There will be no Houston Gamblers football in Houston next year. The team and the league putting out a statement yesterday. The league acknowledging that, hey, maybe changing their name and changing the venue multiple times and changing a bunch of things as we went along might be on us a little bit. The league said that. So, no, if you're a Houston Gamblers season ticket holder, you will be getting your money back. All right, coming up next, Seth Payne is going to empty his old school notebook on the crowd. What did he see at practice yesterday? On the offensive side of the ball, specific positions as well, including the wide receiver room. We will do all of that here in the 7 o'clock hour live from Texans training camp. That's coming up next.
Hey,
I Payne and Pendergast with you into the 7 o'clock hour we go, Sports Radio 610. We are under 2 weeks away from our station becoming 95.7 The Fan, so that's exciting. James Litford just walked by and he said, hey, boys, congratulations on the new stadium.
He did. Yeah, I acknowledge that.
He did.
Yeah,
he listens.
And for anybody that's just, you don't want to get off the AM dial, we'll still be there, but we're going to be on FM 95.7 and Sports Radio 610 AM.
Yeah, it'll be 610 The Fan.
Yeah.
Yep. So that'll be...
610 The Fan.
610 The Fan,
Sports Radio 610.
August 13th. Yep, 610 The Fan, 95.7 The Fan.
Pay attention to these meetings.
That's okay. You got the high points of it.
Yeah.
You're good. Yeah. Besides...
You know what's annoying me now about our company? Now that The Odyssey... Apparently, they wrote this new movie called The Odyssey. Brand new concept. Never been done before.
Yep.
Now that The Odyssey is out, I wanted to Google some stuff about the movie or the original Odyssey, the actual the piece of literature.
Yeah.
But it keeps autocorrecting to Odyssey.
Your voice to text is putting in your employer.
So I'm trying to search for Odyssey the movie, and I'm getting info on Mike Meltzer back in 2016. Yeah.
Well, that's the you know what, if that's your employer and that's the thing that annoys you, it could be worse.
Meltzer is in my list of he's in my top two of co-hosts that I've had.
Oh, nice.
You're on there,
Who's
too.
Who's the other one?
You're on there, too. Yeah.
That would have sucked.
I've only had two. I'm not some hussy like some people that's had a boatload of co-hosts.
I've had so many.
Who knows what I'm picking up?
Oh, yeah. It's Yeah, that's why Seth wears a mask to the show every day. Seth's masking up. My co-host has been with a lot of other co-hosts. All right, so the theme yesterday, Seth. Let's get to emptying your notebook here.
The theme for yesterday was that there's a big difference for me between this year and last year early in training camp, and I've noticed a very distinct absence of an utter lack of utter sense of despair. I do not have an utter sense of despair about the offense. And I had been saying things a lot. I caught myself saying a lot, like, "Oh, it's in no pads. What are you gonna? Yeah, I don't know for real until it's no pads." I think a lot of the issues with the offensive line in the last couple of years has been as much mental as it's been physical. So the missed assignments, the miscommunications, some of those things, whether they're wearing pads or not, you could see that. You could pick up on it. You'd have run-throughs by unblocked defensive linemen. That's gotten drastically better. Like, so that, I don't care whether they're wearing pads or not. It just looks like a better functioning unit out there. And then also, early in camp last year, people were starting to kind of grumble a little bit about, like, oh, I don't know about the, what's going on with CJ. He doesn't seem as accurate as he usually is. We haven't had those discussions. I haven't had any concerns about it. Like, look, he's not going to complete 100% of his passes. Nobody does. He's looked like a competent NFL quarterback, and the offense itself around him looks competent.
No, last year the ball was hitting the ground in 7-on-7s.
Yeah,
and then, you know, and then yesterday, like, he completes and I know NFL football is 11-on-11.
Yeah.
I'm saying, like, the basic things, the basic baseline, he is hitting and overachieving that now.
You know, yesterday we got to go over. They let us they walked us around. We had to walk the entire perimeter to get over to the back
That's
corner.
That's why I didn't go. That looked like a lot of work.
They don't want to mess. This grass is pristine. They don't want to mess this up.
I get it.
With us in our tennis shoes, you know.
Yeah. Right?
Like, meanwhile, we got 300-pounders.
Cleats.
No, but it's fun watching Cole Popovich work because – You know, D'Amico doesn't like his coaches to be all, you know, he wants them to be like modern, you know, don't be a bastard when you're talking to your players.
He said that yesterday. He said the reason our coaches can coach hard is because they connect with our guys as people.
Right. But Popovich is like the movie version of an offensive
line
coach.
He's the closest to the old school.
He is aggressive,
yeah.
You know. And like every coach like D'Amico always has a couple guys on his staff that like, all right, they get away with doing what they want to do, you know, because they're really good and effective at it. And the O-lineman, Popovich is very brusque. But more so than any O-line coach I can remember with the Texans, the players gush about him. Yeah, like, they love him. Like, yeah, you can tell that Popovich, there's some coaches that coach that way, and they're just bastards deep in their soul.
Yeah.
Like, there's some coaches that coach that way, but the players respond to it and like it because they know the guy actually cares about him.
Well, you know? And I think this goes back, too, to the types of guys they bring in. You know, D'Amico Ryans, Nick Caserio, they're pretty meticulous about finding their types of guys, and I think one of the boxes that they check on their types of guys is, can they take hard coaching?
Yeah.
Do they like being coached?
Yeah.
You know, do they like being held accountable? That's what's happening over at that position.
Well, you know, that's it reminds me a little bit of Alex Gibbs Sr., back when he was, you know, the O-line coach that first really helped bring competent offense to the Texans. He was kind of a brusque, old-school type of guy. And it didn't matter if you were a 10-year veteran and it was the highest-played guy in the league, he's gonna let you know exactly what you need to work on. So the offensive line in general, like, my overall takeaway is that they're much more dialed in mentally. So they're not wearing pads. All right, cool. There's some things you're just not going to know until they get out there in pads. But they didn't even have a chance to lose a physical battle last year. Like, they were, like, the guys weren't close enough to get beaten physically because they took two steps in the wrong direction. That's improved drastically, not just from last training camp, but really from the first half of last season. It just looks a lot tighter mentally.
So here was D'Amico Ryans that, yeah, it's looked better. And D'Amico still, though, I love this. Like, he was still in the press conference yesterday, kind of harping on the things that need to improve with this offense. He said the offense maybe went a little bit backwards in day two.
The one thing that stood out to me is, you know, we had some poor pre-snap penalties. We kind of went backwards offensively, so those are some things that stood out where we can clean those things up. Defensively, we got to finish on the football better. Had a couple opportunities to take the football away, and we didn't. So both sides right there got things we can clean up on, come back tomorrow.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when D'Amico brought that up, I think he was thinking specifically about one period, and as it relates to the ones, the first team offense, it was really just one set of downs where Keelan Rutledge had a fumbled QB center snap exchange. CJ was under center. Then there was a run that went nowhere. Then there was a pre-snap penalty. That was the first pre-snap penalty that I had noticed from the ones. So it was conspicuous because that was the only really ugly period that we'd seen the Texans have. And by and large, it looked worse than it did the first day because there were any issues at all. I guess the other part that I wonder about is did they add some complexity to the mix? Because that's where that's when things start going wrong, is when you're adding complexity to it. Are you adding some checks? Were you using some more motion?
Yeah.
That's where you start.
This is where you're allowed to let it go wrong. Best it go wrong in day two of training camp than go wrong in week one against the Buffalo Bills.
Yeah, like by and large, it's been really, really clean. And the O-line and the tight ends, especially in their blocking, it's been very clean. And the pre-snap part's been very clean.
The running backs have gotten a lot of compliments out here from people.
Yeah.
D'Amico was gushing about Woody Marks yesterday.
Yeah, and I think the biggest thing I've noticed with the running backs, two things really, is one, when they're running their zone runs especially, man, if you compare it to Damian Pierce trying to get straightened out and figure out zone runs in the NFL, man, it looked sluggish. It looked like he was hesitant to make his reads. You don't see any of that with Montgomery or Woody Marks or
even Jawar Jordan.
Yeah, they're hitting their reads and taking that one cut and getting upfield really quickly. That's good to see. The other thing is that, and this is similar to something we saw last year, but they're getting the running backs involved in the passing game a lot, and it's in both different aspects of it. There's some designed throws to the running backs. There's been some screens that are well executed by the offensive line, but then also just CJ early in the down, especially if it's first or second down, seeing like, all right, I don't like this coverage, get it to the running back now.
Yeah.
Get it to the running back when he's got some time to work and do something
yeah.
with it. And CJ made progress with that last year, but it's an ongoing process.
David Montgomery's been a nice, I think for people who haven't watched David Montgomery, he's done some nice things in the passing game these first couple practices. He can catch the ball out of the backfield. I think, and I know you point this out in the rundown, this is something I've mentioned a couple times too as we've headed into training camp, is using packages where Woody Marks and David Montgomery are out there at the same time.
Yeah.
The skill set that both of those guys have give you a real luxury, because Woody Marks is ahead of the curve as far as young players go and being able to do everything that allows you to be out there. He's very good in pass pro. He's very smart. Montgomery's been around forever, so we know he's going to be proficient in those things. The fact that they both have kind of a complete all-around skill set really – if they're both out there, there's a lot of mystery that you can provide for the defense.
Yeah.
You know, you can keep the defense off balance with the two of them out there.
Well, and I think the one thing about Woody Marks that, a lot of people nationally might not realize, because they weren't, the Texans weren't much of a talking point in the first half of the season until they righted the ship from their 0-3 start, was that when Woody Marks became the number one back, they stopped, working him in as a receiver as much, and the focus was in just getting him dialed in the run game. But, yes, obviously he's adept as a receiver, but he's also adept as a pass protector. So, by rookie standards, he was really good. Like, he was
really
aggressive,
good.
He cared about it, he was smart, and that's going to be better this year. But what that does for the offense is, look, you got a young rookie running back or a second-year running back who's adept as a receiver, but he can't pass block. It makes it real easy for the defense to know what to worry about. When he's actually adept as a pass protector, then all of a sudden, all right, we don't know exactly, should we blitz? And
yeah.
We know we got a guy in there that can help pick up the blitz, or Woody can make those decisions. That part of it is really intriguing for Woody Marks.
What has stood out to you with the receiving core so far?
Jaden Higgins.
Okay.
Has stood out. Jaden Higgins in both practices, right?
Yeah.
Because he had a really nice catch. He had a nice catch and run. It's hard to tell, okay, would he have, would Jalen Petrie have made a tackle or would he have broken it or whatever on the first day. But yesterday, the first pass he caught from CJ was just a beautifully placed ball on the sideline. I don't know if it was a toe tap or not, but he had to catch it pretty much going, at high speed,
mm-hmm.
out of bounds. And I think for everything that they want out of him and the ability to move him around, use him in the slot, I wouldn't have brought this up because we're not supposed to talk about formations a whole lot, but D'Amico ended up bringing it up yesterday.
Yeah.
We're moving around, we're playing him inside, and he can be that movable chess piece, and he's going to be a lot smarter in his second year in this offense.
We've got that right here. Yeah. Here's D'Amico Ryans talking about Jaden Higgins.
Yeah, Jaden, I put him in the same category of Woody. He's taking that year two jump. You're seeing a guy who we're able to move around the formation a little bit more, get him inside the formation. He's making some plays. Just everywhere we put him. My first play of practice today, run us a great route. CJ gives him a great ball. It just shows his growth, shows a guy you can rely on, guy you can count on, in those crunch situations, and we're going to need him. We need a guy to step up opposite Nico and be a threat, and Jaden can be that guy for us.
And I think we can't overstate this, that this time last year, the inability for C.J. Stroud to get on the same page, really with both rookie wide receivers last year, both their second-year guys now, Jaden Higgins and Jalen Knoll, it was tough sledding early on.
Yeah.
You know, just the precision was not there between the two.
And I think, too, with, you know, last year when there were concerns about C.J.'s accuracy in training camp, a lot of that at times was just receivers not being in the right spot.
Right.
You know, there were some nice – there were some really nice passes. C.J. had some curious incompletions last year, but he also had some passes that were actually placed exactly where the receiver should have been. But when it was a rookie or somebody that wasn't quite up to speed on the offense, it looks like an inaccurate pass. We haven't seen nearly as much of that this year. He threw a really nice pass to Xavier Hutchinson, who was in tight coverage by Jalen Petrie.
Yeah.
The other guys that have shown up, or the other guy that's shown up a lot from multiple different quarterbacks, is Justin Watson.
Yes.
So, like, the back end of the wide receiver depth chart is going to be super competitive. Lewis Bonds made a couple nice plays.
Yeah, it'll be interesting because we know Nico, Higgins, Knoll are all making the teams. I think Xavier Hutchinson is probably too. Tank Dell's a mystery right now.
Yeah.
That's five. Typically, I think they take six. So, yeah, Justin Watson, Lewis Bond, the sixth rounder, you know, there's some good competition at the back end of that room.
The other guy that keeps showing up with multiple different quarterbacks, too, is Brevin Jordan.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know,
tell the people what you're seeing with Brevin Jordan.
Brevin was, for one, in the boot game, was really good yesterday. There was a play where Davis Mills had to scramble and extend the play, and I think it was an honest scramble. It wasn't. It wasn't like, you know, he would have been sacked or
training
whatever.
Training camp scramble.
But he was rolling out to the right, and ended up hitting Brevin Jordan with a nice pass, and Brevin Jordan made a nice catch. But he just keeps showing up. There was one.
Was that the one in the end zone?
Yeah, that was one in the end zone.
That was nice.
There was one where he was running down the seam and he didn't pull the ball in, but he was open. It was a high pass from Davis Mills, and, you know, without the benefit of a replay or anything, I don't know whether I blame Davis or Brevin Jordan on that or both. Mm-hmm. I think it was probably catchable, but I'm more interested in the fact that he was open.
He's getting
down
open.
The seam in
that,
too.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah, he's going to make it interesting. He's got a different skill set than Cade Stover, and really the rest – he's got a different skill set than any of the other tight ends. To keep four tight ends on a roster, that's not typical in the NFL.
You played defensive tackle for 10 years in the NFL. The Texans drafted a defensive tackle in the second round, Caden McDonald. So we're getting our first look at him. If we flip over to the defensive side of the ball, before we get your thoughts on what you're seeing out of Caden McDonald, who's an important player for this team this season and a very important player for this team over the next few years. Here was D'Amico Ryans yesterday when he was asked, how's Caden McDonald looking so far?
Hey, Caden is – really show how strong he is. He's probably one of the stronger guys that we have. You see him doing drills. He's knocking the coaches back a lot. Coaches are trying to hold bags and be tough guys, but Caden is doing a great job of showing the strength that he has. Now, can he pull it all in, and can you consistently play with the proper hand placement, the proper footwork every single row?
All right, give us the early scouting report.
He is incredibly strong, and he's big, and he's powerful. He's physically exactly what he got drafted for. What they're really working on him with right now is his hand placement and just firing off straight ahead. This is very, very normal for a big guy that's trying to work on his technique. He'll come out of his stance and he's throwing his hands, but he's doing it like straight up in the air, which is awesome if you're trying to punch out Glass Joe.
Yeah.
Remember when you hit Glass Joe with the undercut?
Oh, dude, he was toast.
Right. Yeah. Oh, he would knock out Glass Joe in 3 seconds on
punch-out.
Mike
Tyson's punch-out was this game back in the day. Yeah.
No, but it's hard. When you're working on this stuff, you know, you can see that he's really working at it. The first couple days I've impressed with his eagerness to be coached, with the effort that he's putting in there. He's asking for extra reps, and I think it's all there. I can't judge him until they get the pads on. Like, him and Keelan Rutledge both, it's going to be fun to watch those two going against each other. Because they're both big, strong, powerful guys that need to refine their technique. But he's, so far, everything I've seen out of Caden McDonald matches what the scouting report would have said of him. I don't think he's going to get 10 sacks as rookie or anything. He can develop into a guy. I think he will get push in the pocket. And if you look at the Texans defensive tackles, they do a really good job of kind of unselfishly at times not giving themselves a chance to get a sack because they know that their first goal is to push the pocket. And then for defensive tackles, if you're not Warren Sapp or J.J. Watt or somebody, it's dicey when you get to that spot where you've pushed the pocket and then you decide to try to disengage and get past because you create a running lane. The Texans guys like Tim Settle and Tommy Togiai last year, they do a really good job of pushing and then understanding, okay, I got to wait and see where the quarterback's going. McDonald will be really good at that initially already just because of his size and strength.
You know how he set very high goals for himself, Caden McDonald.
Yeah, he
wants to be first-team All-Pro. He wants to be Defensive Rookie of the Year. I don't know if this is on his list of accolades he's looking for, but he is on Gennaro Felice of NFL.com's preseason all-rookie team.
So that's
one accolade right there.
I think it's tough with the Texans because they rotate their defensive linemen so much, and yeah. I think he's initially going to be a guy that is in there on first and second down. I liked what Will Anderson said a couple of days ago about his goals are all about, you know, where he wants to get better, his technique and everything, and not worry about the outside stuff because you don't have a lot of control over the outside stuff and what the voters do or anything. And Will is kind of taking Caden under his wing, so I'm guessing he's having some conversations with him about, like, hey, look, man, you could have for what this team is asking you to do, you could be the best defensive tackle of all time, but you have zero control over whether or not you're going to be first team.
No, the old Caden McDonald is good for radio. When he walks by here, I'm going to pick up my iPad and show him, like, hey, Caden, did you see? You made the first team preseason all rookie.
Yeah.
Stop listening to Will Anderson. Listen to Sean Pendergast.
First team all pro, or you're a loser.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could be a radio host someday if you listen to me, Caden. I know you could make millions of dollars being a defensive tackle, but if you keep saying bombastic things that wind up on the radio, you too can be a hot take artist.
The other thing was, Solomon Bird flashed a few times yesterday. And he's a guy that's in the third year of his career, and he's got a chance here now with both Derek Barnett and Denico Autry gone.
Yeah.
He's got a chance to make the active roster more consistently.
At a position of need.
Yeah, yeah.
You've been saying that, the depth at defensive end.
Will Anderson it wasn't one-on-one pass rush. They were just doing pass rush drills versus dummies. But he did that little Danielle Hunter hop step.
Yeah, you took a video of it. That should terrify the other 31 teams.
It was awesome.
Will is adding moves.
Beautiful. People accuse me of speeding it up, speeding up the video.
No.
I said, no, listen to the audio.
Yeah.
You can hear Rod Wright's voice on there just speaking at his normal
Will
cadence.
Anderson is speeding that video up.
Yeah.
He's
the
one doing it.
He's adding to his repertoire.
Hey, last thing, as we empty out Seth Payne's training camp notebook, we've not talked much about Logan Hall. And as long as we're talking about positions of need and versatility and whatnot, his ability to play outside or inside wind up being big
man,
for this team.
He is a tall glass of water, Logan Hall.
He is tall.
Cougs will remember this.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to Matt Burke a little bit after practice yesterday, and Burke was talking about how he liked Logan Hall coming out.
Did you guys compare beards?
Huh?
Did you compare beards?
He's trimmed down his a little bit.
He's
a little too well manicured, frankly.
So you're the Grizzly Adams of this duo?
Well, he's trimmed down, too. He's lost some weight and everything.
Looks good.
And I was like, man, I was going to – you need to let your beard go a little bit. Get on my gain about 20 pounds or so.
Yeah, gain 20 pounds and grow out your
beard. But he liked Logan Hall coming out of college, and that I think his versatility and his ability to play inside or outside is going to be something that they can use on a game plan by game plan basis. When they first signed him, and D'Amico had said they're going to start him off on the inside, and that makes sense given the scheme that he came out of. They're going to be asking him to do some things at defensive tackle that are different than a lot of what he did in Tampa. Playing, he can go out and play end on this team, and it's going to feel like no big deal at all. So I think a lot of the work is going to be on the inside early on in camp, but he could easily, in any given game, be playing mostly defensive end or mostly defensive tackle, and he's an impressive-looking dude.
Yep. So that's Seth emptying out the notebook, getting you up to speed in a big, big detailed way on what's going on out here at training camp. Let's shift gears for a minute and just take a look inside the AFC South. I would say probably the biggest news involving a non-Texans team in the division is the fact that it looks like Daniel Jones is a full go, or he is a full go for training camp. This was Daniel Jones earlier this week confirming that.
Yeah, I'm feeling good. I think, plan is to be back in 11-on-11 full team drills tomorrow or Wednesday when we start up practice. So be out there with the guys, excited to get back rolling, but feeling good and rehab's been good to this point. Still some work to do as we get ready for week one, but feeling really good with where I am.
All right, you know what? This is annoying me now. Can we cool it down a little bit on the Achilles tendon injury being so easy to come back from these days? The reports out of Colts camp are that he looks mobile. He looks like pre-injury Daniel Jones. He's on rollouts and everything. Just looks like it's no big deal. Look, this used to be a death blow. I don't think we can even use Achilles heel as a metaphor anymore. They're like, what's my Achilles heel? Oh, you mean that thing that might be a minor setback, but then I'll come back
that
from?
I
and
got surgery from, and I'll be back in 3 weeks.
Yeah. This is, but Daniel Jones reportedly, so far, very early in camp, looks like it's this Achilles tendon is no big
Daniel
deal.
Jones doesn't scare me, man. I know they were great the first 8 or 9 games of the season last year. He was on an MVP track. Daniel Jones is a little like Trevor Lawrence to me. You know, they're somewhat similar in that they've had these flashes of play.
Yeah.
That get them paid.
Right.
They get them paid. But Trevor Lawrence is a guy who's played way more bad football than good football. The league has figured him out one time before after a supposed season where he was making the leap.
Yeah.
And Daniel Jones, same thing. He had that big season back in 2022, just like Trevor Lawrence did in 20. There was the same season in 2022. He was with the Giants, Daniel Jones was. We've just seen this from them before.
I'll quote Kalen Bullock, who last year on Good Morning Football said, "We got to stop the run.
Yeah.
That's their whole offense. The whole offense goes through Jonathan Taylor. He's the best back this year. Once you stop him, we feel like the offense don't have nothing else."
I think that's good analysis by Kalen Bullock.
You know, and that's where when – I think Shane Steichen has done a really good job getting the most out of guys like Gardner Minshew, and he does – he'll mix in the RPO. He does a whole lot of misdirection and things that keep a defense off balance. But you can only do so much of that before it's all on film and you know what the little tricks are to try to – cover up his weaknesses.
Yep.
And by and large, if you stop Jonathan Taylor, it makes it really difficult. If you stop Jonathan Taylor, Daniel Jones turns back into a goofy-eyed pumpkin.
Yes.
You know, a pumpkin that looks lost and confused.
Pumpkin, yes. He's a goofy-eyed pumpkin. Here's Chris Ballard, the GM of the Indianapolis Colts. He's in the last year of his contract and was asked about doing a contract extension with the Colts. Here's what he had to say.
No. No. I wouldn't do one.
Why not?
I'm in the last year of my deal. We need to win. We need to win.
Okay.
Yeah, that's that's some self-awareness. You need to win you need to make the playoffs or win a playoff game.
When you look at the body of work of the Colts over the last decade, he got there in 2017 or 2018, around there, about the same time Frank Reich got there. It's incredible that he's lasted as long as he has as the GM. That they've won one playoff game, and it was right across the street here at NRG Stadium back in 2018.
Yeah.
And it's almost like he got a pass for a few years after Andrew Luck up and retired unexpectedly. That was in 2019.
Sean, they haven't
it was before COVID.
Sean, they haven't – guess when the last time they won the division was?
2021, I think they won the division.
2014.
2021, they made the playoffs.
They made the playoffs with the 9-8 record.
Okay.
They finished second that year.
Yeah. That was the Carson Wentz year.
Like, they used to own this division.
They did.
You know?
Yeah.
It was
back in the early days.
Yeah. 2014 was the last time they won the division.
Wow. And last playoff game they won was here, right? They haven't won a playoff game since 2018.
They lost a wild card game in 2020.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So they lost a wild card game. So the last one they won was here. So Chris Ballard will not do an extension. Okay. So if they offer, you telling me, Chris Ballard, they offer you a multi-year extension for tens of millions of dollars, you're going to say no because you got to win this year?
Yeah. Sorry, you were right, by the way. The last one they won was in 2018.
And they won. Yeah.
But they won that. They made the playoffs in 2020, but they didn't win a game.
Yep. Yeah. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Friday here. Let's shift gears over to the Astros for a little bit. All right. So the Astros are 55-55. They are back to 500. They're a half game out in this horrible division that they're in.
Yeah.
55-55 in late July gets you a half game out of first place. Okay, so as we handicap Monday, which is the trade deadline. Trade deadline is 5:00 Monday afternoon. I think the chances of them making a deal that is a seller's deal is practically 0%. I think there's a 0% chance that the Astros are going to be trading a foundational everyday player or a pitcher in their rotation or a key bullpen piece to another team. Everybody who fits that description right now is going to be on this team come August 4th, the day after the trade deadline.
Yeah.
I feel strongly about that. So I think they're either in buy or hold mode right now.
Yeah, right. I'm trying to examine myself and see if ask if I'm just being a punk or if I'm just being too passive about this. I would be totally comfortable with a hold mode with the philosophy that, man, these guys who are either coming off the IL over the last month and or, you know, coming back into form, the way that Pena's been playing specifically has just been a revelation, that it doesn't feel like a typical, it wouldn't have felt like in 2017 when, you know, Keuchel was PO'd that they didn't make a move at the trade deadline, because there are a lot of things that have just happened organically on this team that make them a better baseball team than they were in the first couple months of the season.
There are, and there, well, the fact of the matter is, too, they're just not a good enough baseball team for anybody to be anybody in the clubhouse to be complaining about them not making trades. Like, yeah. Keuchel, when Keuchel did that, they were in first place. You could tell they were on pace to go win 100 games that year. So, the front office is going to do what they're going to do. Look, Jim Crane is somebody who has a history of making at least some moves, anywhere from somewhat aggressive to very aggressive moves. Here is here's Ken Rosenthal earlier this week of Fox and of MLB TV saying that the Houston Astros are the cockroaches of baseball.
The Astros are the cockroaches of baseball. They have won 5 of 6. And as Chandler Rome writes today in The Athletic, they're not going to sell. There have been all these stories about them selling early on Yordan Alvarez and more recently Josh Hader and Jeremy Pena. No, not happening, was never going to happen.
All right, so it was never going to happen. The Yordan thing, I believe, was never going to happen. Pena, I think so, too. Pena, yeah. I think, is a little more nuanced situation, just given his contract.
Know. Was there even any actual – the Yordan thing, he's acting like the Yordan stuff was never going to happen. Like, I don't know what – I don't think anybody really was saying that the Yordan thing was going to happen.
No, that was all people on his network doing hypotheticals.
I gotcha.
Yeah, I think is
he's
what
he's tearing
that
down
was.
A straw man. He's just beating the crap out of that straw man.
Or stupid coworkers that were trying to get Yordan Alvarez up and out of here.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I think if I had to guess – I would say there's going to be a deal made just because there's always a deal made with the Astros.
Yeah.
To me, it's just got to be – and they used to do this back when Luno was the GM too. I mean, there was – you know, Kyle Tucker was untouchable in trade talks back when Kyle Tucker was a prospect.
Yeah.
They need to have a hard freeze on, you know, the tippy-top prospects. And most of those guys are down in A-ball right now. Like, it's the lower levels of the minor league system that people are getting excited about with the Astros. So it's so weird, though, the starting pitching, because they've got like 8 guys that at various times this year have done things where you go, okay, Emi's a perfect example. There was a few weeks ago where I was saying to you, after Emi had a few good starts, he's their number 2 guy behind Hunter Brown. Yeah, and now here we are.
I know.
And now here we are.
There was a time where Mike Burrows was going to be the guy.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a time when, Peter Lambert was DFA'd because we got all these other guys.
He's your number 2 starter right now.
Look at all these other guys. Why would we keep Peter Lambert around?
Well, I can't remember if it was when you were out, or I just remember having a conversation with somebody. Like, what would, if they make the wild card round, what does the pitching situation look like? And the first, it's 2 out of 3. So the first 2 games are easy. Hunter Brown's your 1, and Peter Lambert's your 2. Mm-hmm. Based on where we sit right now, like if the series had to take place tomorrow. So if they split those first 2 games, then who's number 3? And the answer is everybody. I think you just do a bullpen game in number 3. You throw Christian Javier out there to start the game. And if he shows any signs that the invisible ball is not working or he's putting guys on base, you're in now, Eric Eddie, or whoever it is.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, I think that's if you had to play a wild card round series starting this Monday, I think that's what they would do. It's Hunter Brown, it's Peter Lambert, and then who the hell knows what, unless they make a trade for a pitcher, and the Athletic has a big board of the top 60 trade targets.
Yeah.
They've got the Astros listed in the top 3 possibilities for no fewer than about 10 different starting pitchers. Of various levels. Not probably the best or at least the biggest name they've got the Astros being in for would be Sandy Alcantara of the Miami Marlins, who started to pitch like the Cy Young guy that he is lately. Like, they don't have him in there for Skubal or Joe Ryan from Minnesota. But they've got the Astros on that big board listed as 1 of 3 teams for a slew of starting pitchers.
Yeah.
So I think that's – if we see something, it'll be for like a back end of the rotation type starting pitcher. But it's a big weekend, man. big weekend. I think they could get swept by the Rangers and still be buying on Monday. That's how that's how motivated I think they are. All right, coming up next. Oh, we haven't gotten to this yet. The biggest story so far in the offseason leading into the college football season is one of the funnier stories, especially when you hear people talk about this guy who just got put on administrative leave. We've not touched on this story on the show. We need to do that.
That's got relations with a lot of current Texans staff.
Indeed, yeah. Yes. 6 degrees of the New England Patriots. We'll do that coming up. All right, final segment. We'll hand things over to John Harris and Mark Vandermeer. Day 3 of training camp. We'll hear from Jalen Petrie in just a little bit as well. What's been going on the defensive side of the ball through his eyes. We've not talked about this Michael Lombardi story yet this week.
The GM of UNC?
Well, the currently administrative leave GM of UNC.
Still technically the GM of UNC football.
He is. He's presumably still getting a check.
Highest paid GM in college football. $1.5 million.
Yeah. And according to Bruce Feldman, the worst general manager, not just in college football, but across collegiate sports. This is Bruce Feldman of both Fox and The Athletic on his podcast. If you missed it, Michael Lombardi's been placed on administrative leave for a reported HR issue. There's also issues with that clearinghouse the NCAA's created for NIL deals that he's in the crosshairs with as well. So he's got stuff going on with the NIL, and he's got stuff going on, it seems like, inside the building at North Carolina.
Yeah, so I don't know what the HR issue is. I don't know. I haven't like fact-checked this at all, but at least one person who was doing some sleuthing said that Lombardi had liked a thirst trap photo on Instagram.
Oh, okay.
So maybe this is a little bit of an indicator.
Okay.
We don't know.
We don't know. The school has spoken
one
on it.
One thing I would advise for anybody who's working in academia, including just, you know, sports at a college department, is don't do that.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Here's the statement the school put out yesterday. This is courtesy of Bruce Feldman, who we're going to hear from in a second. As a result of concerns behind allegations that led to the personnel action regarding Michael Lombardi announced on July 27th, the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill, through its Office of University Counsel, is in the process of investigating this matter. Because this involves confidential personnel issues, the university will not comment on the nature of the allegations or discuss personnel information. So they're basically saying, we ain't saying nothing. There's something going on. We ain't saying nothing. Bruce Feldman says, they ain't going to miss the guy that much. He's the worst at his job in all of collegiate sports.
You are being very kind. He is, without question, the worst general manager in college sports.
Also,
it's
the
not
highest
even
paid.
Close. He should be getting his paycheck with a ski mask on. I'm sorry. This is such a staggering amount of ineptitude in the job he's had for Bill Belichick, right? And, you know, I go back to the big story we did last year, and he was a focal point of it. It's the arrogance. It's the abrasiveness. I mean, there's a lot of qualities that have rubbed people the wrong way for a long time. But Bill Belichick has been one of the people who has been in his corner and always. And the fact that Bill Belichick trusted him to have the most important job of anybody he could hire, and it has blown up in his face and North Carolina's face spectacularly.
This is one of the strangest blind spots of any highly competent person that I can think of in sports.
I think with Belichick,
Bill Belichick's Michael Lombardi fetish.
He's had him just in various places with the Browns and the Patriots. And when Lombardi, you know, didn't get any more chances at GM anymore, he was like always in some weird position with the Patriots where he was almost like a football. I think he was like a football historian because he knows a lot of stuff. He's like one of those old school football sports nerds that can just pull up all kinds of random data and everything in his brain. I think Belichick liked having him around just to tell him stories. Or he was like the little fellow in Game of Thrones there.
Oh, Tyrion.
Tyrion. Yeah, he was like Tyrion.
Oh,
he might not actually
story.
Be all that competent, but he knows things. And but Belichick going to UNC, you get this sense that there was this level of arrogance that, like, Belichick had a well-earned arrogance in the NFL.
Of course.
Like, all right, yeah, you, like, what are we going to do, argue with you?
Yeah.
but the, all these stories, it sounds like they got to UNC and acted like, wow, we're going to show you guys how it's done, with zero regard for all of the difficulties and intricacies of college recruiting, working with young people, not to mention the rules and regulations and all of that. They just looked wholly unprepared for it. And meanwhile, Belichick's got his much younger girlfriend running around in charge of stuff. He's hiring every family member he can to his staff.
I don't want it to end.
Yeah,
I don't want it to end. It's such a train wreck.
They gotta beat somebody other than an FCS team this year if you want that to happen, Sean.
$10 million a year.
$10 million a year they're paying for this.
Dude, a million. Michael
who's been more of an extreme flameout so far? Urban Meyer going to the NFL or Bill Belichick going to college football?
Oh, boy, that's a good one. That's a good one.
I like both of those guys because what I've long maintained is that, look, and this is one of the reasons it's so hard to evaluate college quarterbacks. They're two different sports.
Yeah.
They are different sports. It might as well be cricket and baseball. They've got a lot of similarities,
yeah,
but man, the differences in the college game are so much different. And then when you factor in all of the transfer portal and NIL and everything else that goes into it, it's not just so simple that, you know, it's like an IndyCar driver. If all of a sudden he jumps into a stock car, he's not going to be the best stock car driver in the world all of a sudden. There's a lot of differences.
This is your question you asked me about who's the bigger flameout, Urban Meyer with Jacksonville or Bill Belichick with North Carolina. I am going to dig into that this weekend because it's a great question. My gut tells me that it's Urban Meyer, and it might not even be that close.
Yeah.
Urban Meyer didn't make it through the full season. Urban Meyer tried to bring in Tim Tebow. Urban Meyer... from all accounts, it seems like the kids at North Carolina actually kind of enjoy playing for Belichick there.
Yeah.
It didn't seem like the Jaguars enjoyed all that much playing for Urban Meyer.
Well, and Belichick has made it through a full year.
Whereas Urban Meyer, he got fired.
That's the biggest difference.
Urban Meyer had off the field stuff too. He didn't fly home with the team after a Thursday night game so he could stay in Ohio, go to Columbus, and
get a lap dance from a work associate.
Feeling up a work associate.
She was more feeling him up, but he wasn't stopping her.
I don't know. She was sitting on his lap.
His hands were to the side. He was following.
He
was acting like he was at a club, and he had to follow the rules.
I go back and look at the replay. I don't. Yeah, yeah. Either
it was more grinding up against him, right?
Yeah.
As he was sitting on that tall chair.
He wasn't saying no.
Yeah.
He wasn't saying no.
But no, I think that whole dynamic of Belichick thinking that he was going to come in and just show everybody how it's done, that rubs a lot of people the wrong way.
Michael Lombardi said, we're the 33rd NFL team.
Right, and they would go on to have zero players drafted to the
That's
NFL.
Exactly right.
Nobody was having a discussion about, like, hey, could UNC beat the Browns?
Right.
What do you think? You guys think UNC could beat the Browns this year?
And if you and Seth think we're being over the top or extreme, just know, go Google it. Every year, there's somebody that says Georgia could beat the worst team in the NFL.
Yeah.
Somebody says it. It's not true.
Yeah.
They couldn't.
We haven't had this discussion with UNC.
No. No. God, no.
Despite them being the 33rd team.
They're on the other end. They're like, could Moeller High School in Cincinnati beat North Carolina?
You know what? One of the things about Belichick's book that I didn't like, and I enjoyed his book. I really liked a lot of the parts of Belichick's book, but I could see the fingerprints of Michael Lombardi in the book because there were times where it was kind of like, you know, Belichick telling some cool stories, talking about film, building a team and all of that and a culture. But then here and there, there'd be sprinkled in like, hey, actually, this is a business advice book. And or at the end of one chapter, it's like, so for young people looking for a job or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's Lombardi, man. Lombardi 100%. Had a talk with him about, like, hey, if you want to make this marketable to the masses,
crossover,
you got to be able to, turn it into a keynote presentation to a Fortune 500 company.
Yeah, you're talking to C-level suite people out there. All right, so we got about a minute or so to go here. To get our game face back on before day three of practice. Here's Jalen Petrie yesterday talking about this defense is about precision and swarming.
From the first play we step out there in a preseason game, it's about pure execution and energy. Like, are we swarming or not? It's really black and white with us, black and white with Coach D'Amico. And, it's one standard. So if we're not living up to it, it's going to be known, and we got to get it fixed.
All right, see, that's the motivational speech I need before we get out here. Today, Seth, we are all about precision and swarming when we cover day three of practice and day four tomorrow. You know there's practice tomorrow.
There's practice tomorrow morning.
9 a.m.
And then there's no practice. Isn't the one tomorrow's open to the public?
Yes, first one. Yeah, yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah, if you got tickets out, tickets for tomorrow's practice, and you see us out here, be sure to wave and say hello.
If you see Sean, grab him.
Yeah, grab me. Yeah,
grab him and take a selfie.
Grab me and hug me, and yeah, let's take a selfie together. That'll be fun.
You guys are in for a good show because Vandermeer's either praying or he's deep in contemplation.
Yeah,
on the side
he is. Though he's filming something.
Oh, he was filming.
He's filming something.
Okay.
And now he just flexed.
I thought he was doing that thing of that coach that kneels and grabs the grass on the sideline. And yeah,
I like his shirt that he's got on too.
You guys are in for a show with Vandermeer and John.
Indeed,
Harris.
Indeed. All right. So, what are you going to be watching for today?
Today, I actually am going to start to try to zero in on the offensive and defensive line more. Even though they're in no pads, I've been watching all the fantasy league players out there. I want to get back down into the trenches.
Nice.
I won't be distracted. Gonna have my blinders on.
Okay.
Sean.
Good. Yeah. So we got you covered out here all day long. Hey, quick reminder too for those of you that I know there's still some of you coming back from vacation. We will be Sports Radio 610. August 13th, circle it, 8 a.m., 95.7 The Fan is born on August the 13th. So we'll be out here all day long today. Mark Vandermeer and John Harris got you next. John Lopez, Reggie Atatula after that. They'll have players coming off the field here as well later on. So have a great weekend out there, and enjoy the rest of the day. Seth, antibodies.
For years, Gone South has been a podcast about crime in the American South. But for our new season, we're widening the lens. Through deeply reported, narrative-driven stories, we're digging into the myths, scandals, and power structures that still shape the South, and, in a lot of ways, the country itself. Follow and listen to Gone South Season 5, an Odyssey podcast, available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.